are on the top of Pei Hei Amud Aleph 85A. And as I was reminded yesterday, davening tomorrow is going to be at 6:30, so we want to cover some ground. Fortunately, this is very good Gemara for covering ground. It's a lot of short pieces, one after the other, without. Hopefully, I shouldn't say this in advance. This is what we call jinxing in Aramaic. Without terrible trouble, we begin. There we go. We begin. Three lines down. We listed in the Mishnah the ideal places from which to bring grain. And we mentioned the place that was called Aforyam. Rashi had another edition of Kofriyim, which was interesting. But Aforyam is a place with incredibly good grain. And it gets used in the following clip from a Medrash regarding Moshe Rabbeinu and the magicians in Mitzrayim. Amri le Yochna u'Mamri le Moshe. Yochna and Mamri, two Egyptian magicians, where we get their names from is a really good question. Say to Moshe, Tevin ata machnis la'Aforyam, you're bringing magic to Egypt. That's like bringing straw to Aforyam, the coals to Newcastle. What do we need with all your magic here? So Amar Lehu, to which Moshe responds, Amri inchi lemasa yarka yarka shekol. People say, if you have vegetables to sell, sell it in a city where they have a lot of vegetables. So the Rashi, as well as the Mefarish, say that Moshe is simply responding to their foolishness in kind. You said something silly, I'm going to say something silly back, and there isn't really a deep dialogue going on here. But the Marasha disagrees. The Marasha says that Moshe is actually rebutting their statement. Their statement is, what you do and what we do is all the same. You're bringing straw to a place where they have straw. We do witchcraft, you do witchcraft. And Moshe's response is that, no, I'm bringing what I do to a place where they'll be able to tell the difference between what you do and what I do. It's like going to the marketplace. You bring in a superior product to the marketplace. You bring it to a place where they don't have anything, they don't know from anything, nobody can tell the difference. If you take your sorcery to some place where they don't know sorcery, they'll think what you're doing is no different from what Yochanan and Mamre do. However, I'm bringing it dafka to Egypt, where people will be intelligent enough, not intelligent enough, educated enough, to be able to tell the difference and see that mine is superior, that mine comes from Hashem, whereas what you do is smoke and mirrors. Yes. Okay, so the name is? Aaron ben Mordechai, in addition to also Fega Bas Yosef. Okay. That's the Marsha's version of what's going on here. So I saw quite a bit in this about responding to foolishness with foolishness. There's quite a bit on this, but I like that Marsha explanation. Okay, new Mishnah. We're still in the issue of the grain that you use for the Omer and how you source it, where it should come from. Tosfos, though, is going to note that the following Mishnah is not just about the Omer; it's about Menachos in general. And you'll see why as we go through it. The Mishnah says, "Ein mevi'in alomi beis hazivalim, v'lomi beis hashlachim, v'lomi beis ha'ilon." You don't bring your grain, again, for the menachos in general, from a field that gets fertilized. Rashi here gives two explanations. The alomi beis hazivalim. He says, "Misada shetzvicha lezabel," from a field that actually requires fertilizer. "Shemalon is dabla kol tzarcha," because maybe it won't be fertilized properly, and then whatever grows will be very weak. The nimzil kol parosea kechushin, the produce will be weak. Alternatively, shazevel mavish umekalkel tama peros, that the fertilizer itself will actually corrupt and deteriorate the taste of the produce. So the two different explanations in Rashi, but I'm not supposed to bring from an irrigated from a field that requires fertilizer. Below, back in the Mishnah, Velomi beis hashlachim, and not from an irrigated field either, apparently out of concern that it might get inadequate irrigation. Velomi beis ha'ilan, or from a field where trees grow, out of concern that the trees, as Rashi says, are going to get all the moisture and weaken the seeds. So you can see why Rashi would bring his first approach regarding the fertilizer, that it's concerned for weakness, because that would be parallel to these other concerns about the irrigation and the trees. Vim hevi kasher, however, if you brought from such a field, it's kasher. We'll see why Rashi gives his other explanation in the next Mishnah. Okay. Ketzad hu ose. That's number one in terms of where they're supposed to come from. Number two, ketzad hu ose. So what do you do? Nara shana rishona. The first year you plow it and leave it fallow. This is niyar like niyar. When you talk about niyar as a flat, clean sheet of paper, it's the same idea. The stay near is a field that's been plowed, but hasn't been planted. Ubashana shniya, the second year, zora kodem lepesach shivim yom. You planted 70 days before Pesach, not at the beginning of the year, but 70 days before Pesach. V'hu osa solas meruba, and then it'll make a great amount of flour. This is not crop rotation. People like to call this crop rotation. It's not. True crop rotation means that you actually plant different crops each year, and they do different things for the soil and take different nutrients from the soil. But you should know crop rotation was around also in the Greek and Roman empires. It's not as though we invented crop rotation. I learned this in yeshiva many years ago when they told us, oh, look at that, the Jews had crop rotation way back when, and who else had crop rotation? The answer is, at that time, pretty much everybody. At least in that region. The Greeks were doing it, the Romans were doing it. It was quite a popular method of farming. And the Mishnah says, this is what we do, granted that what we're talking about here is not true crop rotation. Ketzad bodek. How do you test the flour? Hagizbar machnis yado letochan. And the gizbar, the agent of the Beis Hamikdash, puts his hand in it. Allah ba'avak psula ad sheyinafena. And if powder comes out, it's no good until you sift it. Remember we talked about the 13 sifters. We not only want to remove the coarse stuff, we also want to remove the fine dust. I had a fellow at my daf in Allentown who was in food services, and he explained why. And I checked it out on Wikipedia in an article on flour, and it's true. The dust shows that you have starch rather than protein, and it makes for bad bread. The line in the Wikipedia article is that the higher the protein content, the harder and stronger the flour, and it will produce crusty or chewy breads. Whereas the lower the protein, the softer the flour, and it's better for cakes, cookies, and pie crusts. So for the bread you want in the Beis Hamikdash, you want higher protein, less starch, therefore you get rid of this, which is really just starch dust. You don't want that in the grain. Vim hislia, last point in the Mishnah, if it's wormy, psula, then it's no good. Okay, so that's the Mishnah on where we get our grain for the menachos in general. So the Gemara goes back to this point about leaving the field fallow. We said you leave the field fallow 1 year, and then the next year you plant it 70 days before Pesach. So what happens in the beginning of that second year? Do you plow it in the beginning of the second year, or are you leaving it fallow for a year plus several months before you're actually going to use it? Ketzad osa, how do you do it? We quote in the Gemara, Nara Shana Rishona, you leave it fallow the first year. So the Gemara asks, Ibayalu, Hechi Kamar, how was this said? Nara Shana Rishona Ushnia Nara Vizora. Do we mean that the first year you plow it and leave it fallow? For the second year you plow it again, and then eventually Vizora you plant it. O Dilma, or perhaps Nara Shana Rishona, you plow it and leave it fallow the first year. Ushnia Zora below Nara, and the second year you just seed it without replowing. Now Rashi clarifies here, that's not exactly what we're saying. What we're saying is either you plow it the first year, leave it fallow, and then the second year you don't plow it until you get up to seeding time, and then you plow it and seed it. Or your first year you plow it and leave it fallow, your second year you plow it in the beginning and leave it fallow, and then you plow it a third time when you actually seed. But you never seed without doing a plowing at the time of seeding. That's the way Rashi explains this. So really what we want to know is, are you plowing it twice or are you plowing it three times? Tashma, come in here from the following brisa. We bring a long brisa to attempt to prove the point. This Sanya, as the brisa says, Amar Rabbi Yossi, af chite karzim v'ukfar achim. Rabbi Yossi said, you also bring from karzim and kfar achim. This is one of Tosus' proofs that we're talking about menachos in general and not just the omer, because it says chitim, wheat. And the omer, of course, is barley. So he says, you also would bring from Karzim and Kfar Achim il male shehein the Bach throws in smuchos li Yerushalayim hayu mevi'in mehen. If you take il male with an aleph, it means if not. If they were not close to Yerushalayim, we would bring from them. The Shita Mekubetz has changed it to il male with a yud, which means if they were close to Yerushalayim, we would bring from them. What we can tell is that they're not bringing it from them. From there, the only question is why. So he explains, "Lafishein mivin es haomer elamin asados hamudramos v'hamenu naros lekach." Because you only bring from fields that are to the south, we'll come back to that in a moment, and the fields that are left fallow for this purpose. Shebahen chama zarachas umehen chama shokas. The reason for the south is because that's where the sun shines when it rises, and from them the sun sets during the winter time is what we're talking about. Rashi here says that mudramos means sha'omdos bidroma shel eretz Yisrael. They're in the southern part of Israel. Sha'chama kol yimos ha'choref rov hayom hiyomedes bidarom, because most of during the winter it spends most of the day in the southern part of the sky. We know that the sun does not do a straightforward march from east to west. In different seasons it arcs either to the north or to the south. Rashi elsewhere, the Gemara elsewhere, discusses this in greater detail. So during the winter time, if you're in Israel, the sun is actually arcing to the south. Tosfos says that's silly. He says that it's true about the way the sun travels. That's not his problem. But you're not going to have to see a great variation between the southern part of Israel and the northern part of Israel. Tosfos, that's not what we're talking about. What we mean is, does it have a southern exposure? If it's on a slant, on a mountainside, and it's facing north, it doesn't matter how far south your location is, you're not getting sunlight. So Tosfos says, what we mean is, and the Ma'ariv b'mishupos litzad adarom, it's slanted toward the south. Shaz chamas arachas b'nuyoser, so that it'll have more sunlight. Vein lachush be'ezo ruach shal Yerushalayim. Tosfos said, don't worry about which side of Yerushalayim it's on. That wasn't our point. In any case, we still haven't proved how we plow the field. Back in the Gemara, ketzad oseh. So what do you do? Nara shana rishona. You plant it and leave it fallow the first year. Ushnia choresh. The second year you plow it. Vish. And then you're going to do it a second time, vizoran, and seed it kodom lePesach shivim yom, 70 days before Pesach, kadei shnei smucha lachama. The point being that it should get a lot of good sunlight during the growing season. Literally close to the sun. So it sounds like, we're not done with the brisa, but it sounds like you do the replow. You're doing three plowings. Vaosa kana zeres. You know how good this is going to be. It's going to produce grain which has the kana. The kana is the inedible part of the stalk, and it will be a zeres in length. The zeres, remember, is a length measure. Vishiboles zersayim, and then the head of the sheaf, it will be zertayim, will be two zeres in length. Kana is the inedible part of the stalk, below the where the grain is.
I think the
kana
is the stick.
Yeah, right. The kotzer umaamer vidash vizore uborer vitochin marakid. You harvest it, you make sheaves, you thresh it, you winnow it, you sift it, you grind it up, you do the after sifting. Umevi etel gizbar, you bring it to the agent of the Beis HaMikdash, vigizbar machnes yado lesocha, who puts his hand in it. Imalsa bahavak, if again that starchy powder comes out, omer lo chazor v'napeos hashnia, then he says, go back and resift it. We don't want starch in our grain, we want protein in our grain. Mishum Rabbi Nasan, Amru Gizbar Sach Yado Shemen. They said in the name of Rabbi Nasan that the Gizbar would actually put his hand in oil in order to make it sticky. Umachnas Latochan put his hand in it, Ad Shemala Kol Avka, until he would get all of the starch out, because it would stick to his hand. No concern, evidently, for mixing oil in inappropriately into the Omer. So that's what he used to do. End of Brisa. One line up from the bottom on Pehei Amar Aleph. Kisani Mias Choresh Vishona. So it says that you're supposed to plow and then plow again in the second year. So when you're doing this with the crops, that's your answer. To which the Gemara says, oh, wait a minute. Velita Meich, according to you, even with your approach where you're using this Mishnah, I still have a problem. Mas Nisan Lokatani Shona. Brisa Katani Shona. That's the language of the Brisa. It says do it a second time. Our Mishnah didn't say do it a second time. Maybe our Mishnah disagrees with the Brisa. So he says, Halo Kasha, that's no problem. Kan Ba'avuda, Kan B'She'ina Avuda. I could answer that the Brisa is talking about fields that were not plowed at all the preceding year. So in other words, our Mishnah is saying that if you plowed it and left it fallow one year, then the next year you don't plow it in the beginning of the year. You just plow it when you're going to plant it. And our Brisa is talking about where you didn't plow it the preceding year and leave it fallow. You simply didn't work it. Now you need to plow it twice this year. So I can't prove anything then for our case. So my Havi Allah, what do we do? Tashma, come in here. Desanya, a second source. Nir Chetzia, Vizoreya Chetzia. Nir Chetzia, Vizoreya Chetzia. One plowing per year, and the way they would do it is the first year they would plow half the and then they would and they would and then I'm sorry the first year Take a look at Rashi, Nor Chetzia, because it's not quite as clear as that. He says, Chetzia Dishana Rishona, the first half of the first year, Chorsha Kula, you plow the entire thing, Vizorea Chetzia Omenia Chetzia Nir, you plant half and you leave half fallow. V'chein B'shana Shnia, and you can do the same thing the second year, Choresh Kula, you plow the entire thing, Vizorea HaChetzi Shlo Zara Ishtaka, you plant the second half, the second half that you didn't plant the year before, V'chetzi Shazara Ishtaka Meniach Nir, and the half that you planted the year before, you're now going to leave fallow. V'chol Shana Zorea Nir Shal Ishtakad, each year you're going to plant the area that was left fallow the year before. U'pashit Dei Nara Elapam Achas, and then that means, the evidence is that you're only going to plow it once. Ulahachi ein zora kulakachas, and that's why you're not seeding the entire thing at once. Shein derech b'nei adam lizora kargosein shana achar shana b'nei shematishim es hasadas, you don't plant it year after year, it weakens the field. Lekach zora lachatzah, and therefore you plant it in halves. Umar ben peres b'chol shana, and you'll get better produce. So in fact, the resolution in this price is, it's two plowings, not three. That's the way it, that's the conclusion that we seem to draw regarding this, regarding this method, not crop rotation, but something similar to crop rotation. Okay, good. But that's what they're doing. Incidentally, also, this two-field method was in use until about the 5th century. At that point, they switched over into three, and they did rotations in thirds over a three-year cycle instead of a two-year cycle. Okay. In any case, back to our Gemara. So we understand, sorry? Okay, so we understand how they're leaving this fallow. The Gemara now continues to discuss the value of southern fields, meaning, as Tosfos says, fields with a southern exposure. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ein Mevi'in Es HaOmer El Menasados Hamudramos Shebe'eretz Yisrael, Shebe'en Chama Zarachas U'me'en Chama Shokas. The same thing that we saw before. You want the fields with a southern exposure. That's what's going to get the most sun in the morning as well as in the evening. Tanya Nami Achi Braisa says, Avashol Omer, Omer HaYabami Bikas Base Mikla. Abishol says the Omer grain, as opposed to the all menachos that we've been talking about, came from Bikas Base Mikla. That's where it came from. Kibas Gimel Se'in Haisa. It was a three Sa'ah, we discussed that. Visada Mudremes Haisa. It was a field with southern exposure. Upa Chamazarachas, Mimena Chamashokas. The sun shone from there. The sun set from there. Nir Chetzia Vizarea Chetzia. Nir Chetzia Vizarea Chetzia. Each year you leave half the field fallow. Rav Chilkia Bartuvi, Havale Karna Da'ara. Rav Chilkia Bartuvi had a Karna Da'ara. Rashi says means he had a corner of a field. It was in the south. The near chetzia v'zara chetzia near chetzia v'zara chetzia. He used this method. Va'avda alchad terei, and sure enough, it produced double what he planted. Umaz bin lahu lechite simid l'smida, and he was able to sell his wheat. It was so fine, he sold it for smida. If you remember the Gemara in Gittin, the Tisha B'Av Gemara Nunvav Nunzayin, where Martha Bas Baisus, this matron, sends out her servant to get flour, and each time she sends him out, he says, well, they don't have that, they have this other one. So they have four different types of flour that are mentioned there, parallel to the four kinds of menachos. But but smida is the fine flour that you would use for a mincha. Okay.
If you're going to do every other year to flour, it's going to be the same.
What do you mean the
one
same?
One year plowing, one year not.
No, each year he's plowing it, but he plants it. No, the way Rashi explained it was he's plowing the whole thing annually, but he's only planting it every other year.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how Rashi understands it. Vim hislia psula. We said that if it gets wormy, it's no good. So Tanu Rabbanan, the Braisa says, solas shehislia. If your flour gets wormy, ruba, in the majority of it, psula, it's no good. V'chitin she'eslia ruban psulos, and if the majority of the wheat kernels, before you make them into flour, are wormy, also, psulos, it's no good. Even though you'll say, I'm going to sift down to the worms, nonetheless, we're not going to use it. So, boy, Rabbi Yirmiya asks a question. Berov chita o berov sa'a, the majority of the wheat or the majority of the sa'a? In the margin, based on the Rambam and the Kesef Mishnah, they explain what this is talking about. The question is, do you mean the majority of of each kernel, or the majority of the sa'a, even though it's the minority of each kernel? That's what we want to know, to which the Gemara answers, Teku. Boy, well, I see a lot of Teku today. Boy, Rava says, Igvisha namauze yilaka alein mishum baal mum. He says, okay, let's say you have wormy grain. and you dedicate it to the Beis HaMikdash. So we know that the Torah prohibits you from trying to bring a Baal Mum, a blemished animal, to the Beis HaMikdash. So what if it was what if you tried to bring flour that was wormy? Maushi lakelei mishum Baal Mum, would you get lashes for dedicating a blemished entity? Kevin depasel kebal mum dami. On the one hand, we say it's disqualified, and therefore it's like a blemished thing. O dilma ein bal mum ela bebehema. But maybe you could argue that blemishes only apply regarding animals. So teiku, don't know, because the Torah doesn't specify regarding grain. We just understand that it's not usable. Tanan asam, Mishnah says. Now we transfer over to the discussion regarding wormy wood, not wormwood, but wormy wood. Two different things. Tanan asam, kol eitz shenimtza bo talas pasul v'gabe mizbeach. If the wood has a worm in it, it's no good. Omer Shmuel lo shanu el alach, but Shmuel comments that's only if the wood is moist. And Rashi explains, because if it's moist, you can't really get the worms out. So aval yavesh goro v'kasher, but if it's dry, then you could in fact scrape it and get the worms out that way. I don't know if this works for Asian longhorn beetles, but it works for the worms. So Rava asks his question once again. Rava is assuming, as Tosfos says, that wood is a carbon. And therefore this following question fits. We're not so sure that wood qualifies as a carbon. Boy, Rava, Higdisho Maushi Yilaka Olav Mishum Baal Mum. If he dedicates the wood to the Beis HaMikdash and the wood is wormy, is he liable for dedicating a Baal Mum? Kevin Depasol Kabal Mum Dami Yodama in Baal Mum Ela Bebehema. Same question. Do we view this as a Baal Mum, or do we say no, Mum only applies by animals? Teiku. Once again, we don't have an answer. New Mishnah. We talked about where we get the grain for the menachos. We had a sidetrack regarding wood. We now discuss oil, the oil they use for the nesachim in the Beis HaMikdash. We want to know about the oil, and eventually we'll get to wine. But here is oil. Mishnah says, Tekoa, the place of Tekoa, which is in the region of Asher, Alpha Leshemin. That's your top place to get oil. Abashal Omer Shniyala Regev Bever Hayardain. Abashal said the city of Regev on the eastern side of the Yardain is your second choice. Kol Aratos Hayuk Sheros, you can get it from anywhere. Elamikana Yumivian, but they brought from here. Ein Mivian, like we said regarding the flower, Ein Mivian Lomi Beis Hazivalim, you may not bring from the area of the field that needs fertilizer. Now remember that Rashi, when it came to grain, gave us two reasons. One was if you don't fertilize it properly, you won't get good grain. The other is because the fertilizer itself is disgusting, it'll damage the taste. So here, Rashi only brings you the second explanation. He says it's Heima Usin, it'll be repellent. I don't know if that's because he believes that this is absorbed by the tree, and it corrupts the taste of the fruit of the tree, or because remember how they harvest olives. You whack the tree and the olives fall down to the ground and then you pick them up. So maybe he's concerned about the olives falling into the zevel. I don't know. But that's maybe why Rashi brought his second explanation on the grain. Since Rashi here says that the fertilizer issue is that it's repellent, he wants them to be parallel, perhaps, and say that's the same thing regarding the fertilizer issue for the grain. In any case, you can't bring oil from fields that needed irrigation, that needed fertilizer, velomi beis hashlachim, or from trees that grow in fields that need irrigation, concerned for inadequate irrigation, velomi namasha nizra beneim, or from fields that have plants between the trees, seeded between the trees, out of a concern that they're now competing for the water, for the resource. Vimhevi kosher, but if he did, then it's actually kosher. And they're okay. Ein mevian anpaktan, or anpiknon. You can't use anpiknon either, and we'll see what anpiknon is, but I'll blow the ending for you. It's oil which is from olives that have not yet grown 1/3. And the point is that it's underripe, and therefore it may not be viewed as fully developed oil. Vimhevi kosher, but if you brought it, it's kosher. Ein mevian minagargarin shenishu b'mayim. You can't bring from rehydrated olives. If you have olives that dried out and then they re-soaked them, in order to rehydrate them, you can't get oil from those. Rashi says because the water that it absorbs when it's rehydrated will diminish the quality of the oil. Velomina kvashim, you can't bring from pickled olives. Velomina shlukim, or from stewed olives. Vim hebi pasul, and if you do, that oil is actually pasul. So our first point is about Tekoa. The Pasuk says, when Yoav makes his plot to bring Avshalom back after Avshalom has been exiled, Vayishlach Yoav Tekoa, Vayikach Misham Isha Chachama. Yoav sent to Tekoa and he brought a wise woman from there. Maishna Tekoa. How did he know to send to Tekoa for a wise woman? The Maharsha explains that that's what we're asking here. How did he know to go to Tekoa to find someone who was wise? Rabbi Yochanan, mitoch sheregilin b'shemen zayis chachma mitzuya b'hen. Rabbi Yochanan said, because they were involved in olive oil, therefore they are wise. Rabbi Yosef Engel said in Magalios HaShas, points out that the Zohar and Vayikra links oil and chachma, and it fits with a couple of things. Number one, it fits with use of olive oil in the menorah, because we turn to the menorah to daven for chachma, for wisdom. And also, along with that, harot sheyach kim yadrim, if you want to be wise, you point to the south when you daven. And the Gemara in Yuma Chafal from the base says that the south wind is good for olives. So we associate olive oil with wisdom. And here we see it as well. And it leads us to a very interesting story. It's sort of a tenuous connection, but where the menorah stands in the south in the Beis HaMikdash, and we associate the menorah with the light of Torah. There must be more to it than that. I'm looking at the Zohar there. It's Zohar Vayikra Dav Zayin Amud Beis. But the Gemara now, having mentioned the oil of this region of Asher, continues in that vein. Tanu Rabbanan, Brisa says, second wide line, V'tovel b'shemen raglo, from the brachos that Moshe gives to Usher, he dips his foot in oil. Zeh chelko shel Usher, that's the portion of Usher. Shem Moshech shemen kimayan, the oil flows there like from a spring. Omru, they said, and here's a great story. Pam hachaz nitzruchu lehen anshe lutkia b'shemen, the people of Lutkia once needed oil. They're not Jewish. Minu lahen pumustus echot, so they appoint a legionnaire. Remember that pulmus vespasianus, so pulmus is a legion. So this is a legionnaire whom they appointed, and Rashi is the one who says he wasn't Jewish. Obed Kochavim Memuna. So Midlan Pomustas Echad Amrullah, they said to him, Lech Vavel Anu Shemin B'Meir Rebo, bring us oil, and we are willing to pay 100 times 10,000, in other words, 1,000,000. We're willing to pay 1,000,000 mana for this. Wow. Halach liYerushalayim. So he goes to Yerushalayim to find out where to get good oil. You go to the Beis HaMikdash, right? Just like the Masa de Yarka. You go to the vegetable market where they know vegetables. You go to Yerushalayim to find out about the oil. Amrullah Lech Letzor. They said go to Tzor. Tzor here does not mean Tyre up in Lebanon. Tosfos points out this is a region in Israel. Halach Letzor. He goes to Tzor. Amrullah Lech LeGush Chalav. And he said go to the region of Gush Chalav, which is in Asher, Rashi says. Halach leGush Chalav, Amru laLeichet Zaploni leSada Halaz, they said go to so and so in this field. So Halaz may be Halach. Umitzau Shaya Ozek Tachas Zesav. They went and they found him being Ozek. Ozek Tosus brings a couple of possibilities: either making a fence, or more likely digging out, destoning the ground around the olive trees. Amar lo, he says to him, this man who looks like he's just a common worker, Yesh lecha shemen b'meir ribo shani tzarech, do you have the $1,000,000 oil that I'm looking for? Amar lo, hamtein li ad shesayim malachti. He said, wait until I finish my work. Himtin ad shesayim malachto. The man waits until he finishes working. Lacha shesayim malachto, hivshal kelev lacharav, vayim esakel uba baderech. The man finally finishes working, he puts his clothing over his shoulder, and he walks home all along the way, clearing out stones from the road. And Rashi says, the legionnaire assumes, this guy is just a petty little worker. He isn't going to have oil, because look at him doing manual labor like this in the fields. So Amar lo, Yesh lach Hashem b'meir ribo. He said, could it be you have $1,000,000 oil? K'meduma ani sheschok sach kubia Yehudim. I think the Jews are playing a prank on me. Kevin Shigili Iro comes back to the guy's city. Hotsia lo shivchaso kumkumum or kumkumus shel chamin. Varachas boyada varaglav. He gets home. The shivcha brings out a kettle of hot water for him to wash his hands and feet as is appropriate. And then hotsia lo sefel shel zav. She brings out a gold trough. Malaya shemen filled with oil. The tava boyada varaglav. And he dipped his hands and feet in it. The kayem ashenemar v'tovel b'shemen raglav. That's Moshe's bracha. La'achar sha'achlu v'shasu, they eat, they drink, madad lo shemet me'er ribo. And he measures out, sure enough, $1,000,000 worth of oil. Amar lo klumat tatzarech liyoser, he says, do you need more? Amar lo hein, the man said, yeah. Ela she'en li damim, but I don't have the money for it. So Amar lo, he said to him, atarot ali kach kach, if you want, you can take it on credit. V'ani elech imach ve'etol damav, I'll go back with you and I'll get the money. Madad lo shemen b'shmona asar ribo, he measures out another 180,000 mana worth. Amruin, they said, Lo hinia oso ho ish, lo sus, velo parad, velo gama, velo chamor, beretz yisrael, shlo scharo. In order to transport it, that man needed every horse, mule, camel, and donkey in Israel. He needed to rent them all in order to transport all this oil. Came and she gili ro, the man got home. Yatsu anche iro lakal, so the people of the city went out to sing his praises. Amralem, and the man said, Lo li kal suni, the kilos, the praise shouldn't be for me. Elezeshaba imi, it should be for the one who came with me. Shemada li shemad b'meir ribo, he measured out for me a million mana worth of oil, bari no shabi b'shmona asre ribo. And I still owe him another 180,000. And that fulfills the pasuk. There are some people who pretend to be wealthy and they've got nothing. And then there are other people who pretend to be poor, and in fact, they have great wealth. It depends on whether they're standing before the scholarship committee or not. No, the line at the end says the Maharsha is about the shaliach versus the man with the oil. The shaliach looks wealthy because he has all that oil with him, but in fact he has nothing because he owes money. The man with the oil looks poor because he works in the field and he walks with the guy, but in fact he is actually very wealthy. We're going to continue hopefully to the Mishnah here because we have the time for it, and tomorrow is a short daf. Ein mevi and lomi beis hazvalim. We said not to bring from the area that's fertilized v'chule. The whole discussion there. We said don't bring this unpicton or unpicknown. So v'atanya, the Gemara is bothered. We said in the Mishnah if you brought unpicknown, it's kosher. But I have a brisa that says ein mevi and unpicton v'mevi puzzle. If you bring it, it's actually no good. Mipnesha hu saraf, because it's not called oil, it's simply called the liquid, the sap that flows from the fruit. This is not oil. So Rav Yosef lo kasher. Rav Yosef says that's no problem. Ha Rabbi Chia, ha Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi. It's a machlokas tanoim. Rabbi Chia zarekle. Rabbi Chia used to throw out the unpicknown. Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi metabel bay. Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi used to use it to dip his food. V'simanach ashirim mekamtzin, and the way to know which is that the wealthy people, literally the wealthy people, were stingy. Rashi explains, ashirim mekamtzin, Rabbi Shimon shari ben Nasi va'asher haya kom va'yakomtzo va'ochlo. Rabbi Shimon, the son of Rabbi, is wealthy, because remember that Rabbi was wealthy, and he used to grab it kometz, like kmitza. He used to use that oil. So that's the comates. Whereas the other one, Rabbi Chia, who was the nephew, but apparently he wasn't the wealthy one, would get rid of it, which is unusual. It's not what you expect to see. You expect to see the wealthy one discard the sub-quality stuff. Shishach Hadashim B'Shemen Hamor. So regarding Esther, right, and the women who came to Achashverosh, they spent 6 months in the bath of myrrh oil. My Shemen Hamor, what is this myrrh oil anyway? Rav Huna, and why is this spelled with an H? Rav Huna Bar Chia Amar Satachta. Rav Huna Bar Chia says it was Satachta, and Rav Yirmiyah Bar Abba Amar Shemen Zayis Shalom Evi Shlish. He says it's Shemen Zayis, olive oil from olives that have not yet reached one third of their growth. And Tanya, I have a brisa that says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, unpicknown is Shemen Zayis Shloei Vishlish. That's what it is. The unpicknown is this olive oil from olives that have not yet reached one third growth, so that's what your unpicknown is. The Lama Sachin Oso, why did you use this specifically? What was the advantage of this, that for 6 months you have to sit in this bath? Shemeshir es haseir uma'adein es habasar. Just like a commercial. It removes the hair and it softens the skin. You don't bring from the olives that had to be rehydrated in water. Tanu Rabbanan, the Brisa says, Shemen Zayis Kavush, oil from an olive that has been pickled, shaluk, or stewed, or sharui, soaked in water. Vishel Shemarim, if you have sediment olives, meaning olives that had already been squeezed and all that, and you just have a little bit of sediment left, and now you get some oil out of the sediment. And vishel reach ra, or olives that have a bad smell, lo yavi, don't bring oil from those. Vimhevi pasul, and if you did, it's no good. So Rabba comes in once again with his question, the same question he asked regarding the wormy grain, the same question he asked regarding the wormy wood. So boy Rabba, hikdisha maushi ilake olav mishum balmum. If you dedicate olive oil from these inferior categories, do you get lashes for dedicating a blemished entity? Came into pasul kabalmum dami. It's pasul, so therefore we treat it as blemished. No dilma ain balmum elabibahim. Or perhaps we say that only animals can qualify as balmum. To which he answers, Teiku. I'll pick up with that, God willing, tomorrow.